Holly was not a girl who could keep anything. And surely by now she has lost the St. Christopher's medal I gave her that Christmas. But the birdcage is still mine. I've lugged it to New Orleans, Nantucket, all over Europe, Morocco, the West Indies. Yet I seldom remember that it was Holly who gave it to me. Because at one point I chose to forget. We had a big falling out, and among the objects rotating in the eye of our hurricane were the birdcage and O.J. Berman and my story, a copy of which I'd given Holly when it appeared in the University Review. Sometime in February, Holly had gone on a winter trip with Rusty, Mag, and José Ibarrajegar. She was brown as iodine. She'd had a wonderful time. Well, first of all, we were in Key West, and Rusty got mad at some sailors or vice versa. Anyway, he'll have to wear a spine brace for the rest of his life. Dearest Mag ended up in the hospital, too. First-degree sunburn. Disgusting. All blisters and citronella. Whew. We couldn't stand the smell of her, so José and I left them in the hospital and went to Havana. Of course, when we got back to Key West, Mag was positive I'd spent the whole time sleeping with José. Actually, things were pretty tense till I had a heart-to-heart with her. We were in the front room, where, though it was now nearly March, the enormous Christmas tree, turned brown and scentless, still occupied most of the space. A recognizable piece of furniture had been added to the room, an army cot. And Holly, trying to preserve her tropic look, was sprawled on it under a sun lamp. And you convinced her? That I hadn't slept with José? Oh, God, yes. I simply told her, but, you know, I made it sound like an agonized confession, I was a dyke. She couldn't have believed that. The hell she didn't. Why do you think she went out and bought this army cot? Leave it to me. I'm always top banana in the shock department. Oh, be it, darling, darling, rub some oil on my back. While I was performing this service, she said, O.J. Berman's in town, and listen, I gave him your story in the magazine. He was quite impressed. He thinks maybe you're worth helping. But he says you're on the wrong track. Negroes and children, who cares? Not Mr. Berman, I gather. Well, I agree with him. I read that story twice. Brats and niggers, trembling leaves, description. It doesn't mean anything. My hand, smoothing oil on her skin, yearned to raise itself and come down on her buttocks. Give me an example, I said quietly, of something that means something, in your opinion. Wuthering Heights? She said without hesitation. The urge in my hand was growing beyond control. But that's unreasonable. You're talking about a work of genius. Oh, it was, wasn't it? My wild, sweet Kathy. God, I cried buckets. I saw it 10 times. I said, oh, with a shameful, rising inflection. The movie? Her muscles hardened. The touch of her was like stone warmed by the sun. Everybody has to feel superior to somebody, she said. But it's customary to present a little proof before you take the privilege. Don't you want to make money? I haven't planned that far. That's how your stories sound, as though you'd written them without knowing the end. Well, I'll tell you, you'd better make money. Not many people are going to buy you bird cages. Sorry. You will be if you hit me. You wanted to a minute ago. I could feel it in your hand. And you want to now. I did, terribly. My hand, my heart was shaking as I recapped the bottle of oil. Oh, no. I wouldn't regret that. I'm only sorry you wasted your money on me. Rusty Trawl is too hard a way of earning it. She sat up on the army cot, her face, her naked breasts coldly blue in the sun lamp light. It should take you about 4 seconds to walk from here to the door. I'll give you 2. I went straight upstairs, got the birdcage, and left it in front of her door. The next morning, as I was leaving for work, I saw the cage perched on a sidewalk ash can, waiting for the garbage collector. Rather sheepishly, I rescued it and carried it back to my room. A capitulation that did not lessen my resolve to put Holly Golightly absolutely out of my life. She was, I decided, a crude exhibitionist, an utter fake, someone never to be spoken to again. And I didn't. Not for a long while. We passed each other on the stairs with lowered eyes. If she walked into Joe Bell's, I walked out. At one point, Madame Safia Spanella circulated a petition among the brownstone's other tenants, asking for them to join her in having Miss Golightly evicted. She was, said Madame Spinella, morally objectionable. Though I refused to sign, secretly I felt Madame Spinella had cause to complain. But her petition failed, and as April approached May, the open-windowed, warm spring nights were lurid with the party sounds, the loud-playing gramophone, and martini laughter that emanated from apartment two. It was no novelty to encounter suspicious specimens among Holly's callers. Quite the contrary. But one day, late that spring, I noticed a very provocative man examining her mailbox. A person in his early 50s with a hard, weathered face, gray, forlorn eyes. He wore an old, sweat-stained gray hat, and his cheap summer suit, a pale blue, hung too loosely on his lanky frame. He seemed to have no intention of ringing Holly's bell. Slowly, as though he were reading Braille, he kept rubbing a finger across the embossed lettering of her name. That evening, I saw the man again. He was leaning against a tree and staring up at Holly's windows. Sinister speculations rushed through my head. Was he a detective, or some underworld agent connected with her Sing Sing friend, Sally Tomato? As I walked to the corner, heading east towards the Hamburg Heaven at 79th and Madison, I could feel the man's attention focused on me. Presently, without turning my head, I knew that he was following me. Hamburg Heaven was empty. Nevertheless, he took a seat right beside me, at the long counter. He smelled of tobacco and sweat. He ordered a cup of coffee, but when it came, he didn't touch it. Instead, he chewed on a toothpick and studied me in the wall mirror facing us.
"Son," he said, "I need a friend."
He brought out a wallet. It was as worn as his leathery hands, almost falling to pieces. And so was the brittle, cracked snapshot he handed me. There were seven people in the picture, all grouped together on the sagging porch of a stark wooden house, and all children, except for the man himself, who had his arm around the waist of a plump, blonde little girl, with a hand shading her eyes against the sun.
"That's me," he said, pointing at himself. "And that's her, and this one over here," he added, indicating a tow-headed beanpole. "That's her brother, Fred."
I looked at her again. And yes, now I could see it, an embryonic resemblance to Holly in the squinting, fat-cheeked child. At the same moment, I realized who the man must be. "You're Holly's father." He blinked, frowned.
"Her name's not Holly. She was Lula Mae Barnes." "Was," he said, "till she married me. I'm her husband, Doc Golightly. I'm a horse doctor, animal man, do some farming too, near Tulip, Texas." "Son, why are you laughing?"
It wasn't real laughter, it was nerves. I took a swallow of water and choked. He pounded me on the back.
"This here's no humorous matter, son. I've been 5 years looking for my woman. Soon as I got that letter from Fred saying where she was, I bought myself a ticket on the Greyhound. Lulu May belongs home with her husband and children."
"Children?"
"Them's her children," he said, almost shouted.
He meant the four other young faces in the picture, two barefooted girls and a pair of overalled boys. Well, of course the man was deranged. "But Holly can't be the mother of those children. They're older than she is, bigger."
"Now, son, I didn't claim there was her natural born children. Their own precious mother, Jesus rest her soul, she passed away 4th of July, Independence Day, 1936, when I married Lulu May. That was in December 1938. She was going on 14. Maybe an ordinary person being only 14 wouldn't know their right mind, but you take Lulu May. She was an exceptional woman. She knew good and well what she was doing when she promised to be my wife and the mother of my children. She plain broke our hearts when she ran off like she done.
It was too implausible not to be fact. Moreover, it dovetailed with O.J. Berman's description of the Holly he'd first encountered in California. You don't know whether she's a hillbilly or an Okie or what.
Plain broke our hearts, the horse doctor repeated. She had no cause. All the housework was done by her daughters. Lulu May could just take it easy. Our own cows, our own garden, chickens, pigs. Son, that woman got positively fat, while her brother growed into a giant. Which is a sight different from how they come to us. 'Twas Nellie, my oldest girl. She come to me one morning. She said, Papa, I got two wild young'uns locked in the kitchen. I caught them stealing milk and turkey eggs. Well, you never saw a more pitiful something. Ribs sticking out everywhere. Legs so puny they can hardly stand. The story was, their mother died of the TB and their papa done the same. Lulu May and her brother, they've been sent off to live with some mean, no-count people 100 miles east of Tulip. She had good cause to run off from that house. She didn't have none to leave mine. 'Twas her home.
He leaned his elbows on the counter and, pressing his closed eyes with his fingertips, sighed. She plumped out to be a real pretty woman. Lively, too. Talky as a jaybird. First thing you know, I'm out picking flowers. I tamed her a crow and taught it to say her name. I showed her how to play the guitar. Just to look at her made the tears spring to my eyes. And the night I proposed, I cried like a baby. She said, "What do you want to cry for, a dog? Of course we'll be married. I've never been married before." He chuckled and chewed on his toothpick a moment.
"Don't tell me that woman wasn't happy," he said challengingly. "We all doted on her. She didn't have to lift a finger, except to eat a piece of pie, except to comb her hair and send away for all them magazines. Ask me, that's what's done it. Looking at show-off pictures, reading dreams. That's what started her walking down the road. Every day she'd walk a little further, a mile and come home, 2 miles and come home, and one day she just kept on."
I carried our checks to the cashier. While I was paying, he joined me. We left together and walked over to Park Avenue. I said, "But what about her brother? He didn't leave?"
"No, sir. Fred was with us right till they took him in the army. A fine boy, fine with horses. He didn't know what got into Lulu May. After he was in the army, though, Fred started hearing from her. The other day, he wrote me her address, so I come to get her. I know she's sorry for what she done. I know she wants to go home."
He seemed to be asking me to agree with him. I told him that I thought he'd find Holly or Lulu May somewhat changed.
"Listen, son," he said as we reached the steps of the brownstone. "I advised you I need a friend, because I don't want to surprise her. Scare her none. That's why I've held off. Be my friend. Let her know I'm here."